is just started. You can go ahead with your call. Thank you.
Could we have a roll call, please?
Absolutely. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call on Tuesday the 16th of February, our TPD PDP group, we have Michele Nalon, James Bladel, Mikey O'Connor, Paul Diaz, Michael Collins, Barry Cobb, Matt Serlin, Chris Chaplow, Kevin Erdman. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Linda Saint-Géry, Olaf Nordling, myself, Giza Gruber-White. We have apologies from Barbara Steele, David Geezer, Anil George. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking, and I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. Over to you, Michele.
Good afternoon, everybody. I think there'll be fewer of you than normal, or maybe I'm just imagining it. Right, so just move on with what we had down here, which is reviewing the constituency stakeholder group statements, which on the super duper grid thing that is there in front of us. Where had we left that, Marika?
This is Marika. I think we left at the issue B, the second comment.
Okay. Where's that gone to?
Although, of course, I think we did already have broader discussions triggered by the first comments.
Okay, so issue, we've got on to issue B. All right.
Yes. And I think we addressed the first comment, but not specifically the second one.
Right. So we had we looked at the second one? No, we have. That does not look familiar to me at all. Okay, recommendation to implement a consistent policy regarding the proof required to undo a domain name transfer in this scenario. Notarized affidavit signed by the registrant and proof of identity, a template could be provided as a guide. Any suggestions, thoughts on that? Comments, feedback? Anybody? Do you all think that's a good idea, a bad idea?
This is Michael Collins. Unfortunately, I don't have Adobe Connect working. It's acting like I have never used it, and it's reloading the software. So I'm not on. I don't have an option to read that. Could you read it one more time for me, Michele?
Sure. Recommendation to implement a consistent policy regarding the proof required to undo a domain name transfer in this scenario. The proof being a notarized affidavit signed by the registrant and proof of identity. A template could be provided as a guide.
Thank you.
Okay. Right, Mikey, then James.
This is Mikey. I beat James by at least 2 microseconds. It's too bad Barbara's not on the call. To expand this a little, since it came from the registries, but I think what it gets back to is that speedy, the theme that we've been talking about for quite a while, which is speedy end to harm and rigorous process to resolve the dispute. This falls, at least in my view, in the rigorous process to resolve the dispute part of whatever we recommend, since it would be a pretty burdensome process to get done quickly, I would think. But other than that, I'm comfortable with it. That's it for me.
Okay. James? And then Chris.
Hi, Michele. This is James speaking, and I'm reading this comment, and I'm trying to find the context under which process are they discussing the threshold for proof of identity, and are they saying that this is a dispute resolution? Are they talking about, for example, would this be limited so it could not apply to any form of urgent return or CDRP changes that we were discussing earlier. Our own, and the reason I'm asking that is because it kind of depends on who would adjudicate that that threshold had been met, whether it was the registry or the registrar in question. So there's some other questions associated with this comment. And then finally, I think that we have a process internally, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, shooting from the hip here, but I think we do require that that proof of identity includes two forms of photo-issued, government-issued photo IDs. And I think that, you know, requiring a signed affidavit, a notarized signed affidavit, seems a little onerous from where I sit, but, you know, maybe I'm just not viewing it in the proper context.
Okay. Just on the terms, just one question. How many photo IDs would most of you normally have? Just curious.
Two. This is Mikey.
Two.
Driver's license and passport, those are the two that come right to mind.
Okay. I'm just wondering. We had an issue over here where when they introduced the European bit of legislation about anti-money laundering, and you ended up with a situation where a lot of people couldn't open bank accounts because they didn't have a passport and they didn't have a driver's license. So, right, Chris, Mikey, Paul, Kevin.
Hi there, Chris.
I'm going to skip Mikey, by the way. It's going to go Chris, Paul, Kevin, Mikey. Sorry, Mikey.
Thank you. Okay, Chris speaking. Yes, those words, notarized affidavit, they've been shudders down my spine because I remember the old days when it was just network solutions, and simply to transfer a domain ownership required a notarized affidavit. And in those days, it wasn't internationalized at all. So down here, it meant a 100-mile drive to the nearest American consulate to find somebody to actually notarize that. So, you know, it can also bring problems in different jurisdictions and in places where there aren't notarized and what is and what isn't. And because that's so difficult to define, I imagine, you know, that in itself is going to cause problems.
Thank you.
Okay. Paul?
Thanks, Michele. I just wanted to follow on both what Chris and especially James said. To follow on, especially with James, you know, we already do require the picture identification, a lot of other paperwork, et cetera. I would just ask the group in the notes here to make it very clear that, you know, it's sort of a left scratching our heads, understanding this just seems like extra process and time-consuming process at that, because, you know, needing the hard copy of an affidavit and then, you know, getting that transferred to the registry to show them and all. It just seems like it's going against the intention of trying to assist a registrant who's been harmed by an inappropriate transfer. You know, it's just kind of left wondering if the registry can provide a little more insight into why they want to add more process when it's basically only going to increase the amount of time that will take, not necessarily guarantee that it's going to result in what the registrant would hope the end result, because again there may be issues with providing the appropriate identification, et cetera. So it's just, you know, a question for the notes, please, to make it very clear that it's not at all clear how this helps undoing inappropriate transfers, and you know, if the constituency could provide a little more insight into why they think this above and beyond what already is in place, why this would help, as opposed to what appears to me to be more of a hindrance or a time-consuming hurt.
Okay. Kevin, Mikey, then James, and Chris, is your hand still up or by accident, or is that intentional?
Apologies, accident.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just trying to make this reasonably fair within reason. Okay, your hand is back up again. Okay. Kevin, then Mikey.
Yeah, this is Kevin. I just wanted to... I'll reiterate what point that Chris made, which is that notaries aren't present in all jurisdictions, it really seems like something that is not particularly relevant to every registrant, because the question would be from the legal standpoint of standing. Who has the standing to complain about the transfer? And I think that's sort of the threshold issue that we need to deal with, because, for example, if the registrant is an organization, then we have, the policy would have to make some provision for that organization to be able to manifest its desire to get back the domain quickly. And I think it would be a good idea if there was some way that the registrars themselves could provide for that identification or some mechanism, rather than relying on, quote, the notary or some other process which may or may not be that germane to the business of the registrars. So that's my comment.
Does anybody have anything? Okay, does anybody, because you're all coming back with very similar comments, I mean, there's different angles to it, but does anybody actually agree with with this suggestion about notarization and ID and everything? Does anybody actually agree with that?
Well, this is Mikey. The point I was going to make is that I would bet that we agree on the intent of this comment, which is, during the dispute resolution process, rigorous verification of the identity of the parties, and that we disagree on the mechanism that they chose as an example, and that if we were to check with Barbara, I bet that she would agree too that if two forms of picture ID or whatever set some threshold standard or some portfolio of mechanisms to verify the identity of the complainants, but leave a little bit more flexibility than just picking one specific vehicle, which, I agree, notarizing is a problem. That would be the distinction I'd make.
James?
Yeah, McKelly, this is James speaking, and I wanted to, I think Mikey expressed the same direction that I was thinking in here, where I think that the sentiment is understood, the implementation of verifying identification or what constitutes sufficient identification is probably going to vary from situation to situation, but I want to tie this issue, and I think it goes back to something that Paul was saying, back to the harm. I think that if we're talking about an inappropriate transfer where the registrant and the admin contact disagree and the registrant, in this case, is trying to overrule that, I mean, could that not be resolved similarly to the urgent return TDRP reform or anti-hijacking discussion that we were having a couple of weeks ago? Because I think that, identifying or establishing the proof of identity of the registrant in that situation would be a component of whatever we propose in that, and I think that then takes care of the sentiment that the registry constituency is putting forward here.
Okay. Barry, do you want to add to that comment you had on the chat?
This is Barry. Not specifically, I support what Mikey was stating. We shouldn't be nailing down exactly how the ID aspects work, but really kind of just carrying on to full disclosure here, I've registered a domain name through Black Knight, and being a U.S. citizen, part of that process was that I had to email a copy of my driver's license or some form of ID to complete that registration. It did slow things down a little bit, but it certainly helped legitimize the process. Thank you.
Barry, just to explain, the reason we do that is it's more to do with the credit card fraud than anything else. We're not saying that Americans are fraudulent. We're just saying that because of the nature of our business, we are a very, very large target for fraud. but thanks for the business. Michael Collins, and then Mikey.
Thank you. Without advocating the requirement for notarization, because I accept the difficulty, I will point out that it's probably a lot easier to falsify documents that are basically just photocopies or something that is faxed or emailed than to forge original documents. And I think that the purpose of having someone notarize that the person signing the agreement has presented, original documents to a human being, it may provide some value. And at least I understand, I think, why it was suggested. That's all.
Okay. Mikey?
This is sort of piggybacking on what James was saying. I think that this goes hand in hand with that discussion we had earlier about a couple of meetings ago about the urgent return. I have a feeling that what's going on is that we're dropping down a level of granularity below where we might want to be. In that, at some point, we may want to actually go off and design a process. And in that process of designing, I think the thing to take away, at least for me, from this particular bullet is when we design the process to resolve the dispute, we should have rigorous ways to authenticate the identity of the participants. Michael's point is well taken. And again, I think that there are probably lots of different ways to accomplish the rigorous identity thing without specifying one. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if Barbara would agree with that.
Okay. Question to everybody. Do we think it's suitable for us here to suggest a policy or a process for this? Or is it enough to simply state that a process or a policy is needed? I hope that question makes some sense. Mikey, your hand is still up, so I'll let you.
No, no,
answer.
That's a new one.
Michele, this is the.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in because that very question came up during the week that you were absent,
yeah.
And.
And we
asked him to take that back to council, and I think that the answer was in the affirmative that they would like to see some proposals for policy, not just agreement that that something is needed.
Okay, well, the question I was asking was more along the lines of what do we feel ourselves as opposed to whether the GLSO allow us to do that, if that makes sense. In other words, are we as a group happy to do it, or are we happier just to say, look, this needs to be addressed, but maybe we're not the people to do it?
Well, I think it does make sense, but I think then the follow-up question is, if not us, who?
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. This, Michele, this came up on that call that you weren't on, and the sense of the group, at least on that call, was we're probably the closest to this and the best qualified folks to take it on. Now, some of us have been on this for a couple, 3 years now, and if, like James said, if not us, who?
Okay, fair enough. Kevin?
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate, I thought that the group was fairly positive about wanting to propose something. I guess the big question would be to what level of detail that we'd want to go, but I would say as much level of detail as it makes sense to, try to figure out things that actually work to the benefit of the registrants and the registrars. Well, that's my comment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, then. I think we'll have to come back to that then. What I would just personally... I'm against, as some of you know, I'm against all this subgroup rubbish because I just think it's totally pointless and doesn't really lead towards resolution of anything. I am very much in favor of, you know, one or two people saying, hey, look, I'll throw something together and see what other people think. So would anybody be interested in volunteering to just kind of put down some kind of random notes on what we agree and don't agree on in terms of how we could start to approach this? I'm not so, it's like a kind of a rough kind of, you know, this is the kind of concept that we need. Would anybody like to throw themselves on a sword? It's a very nice sword. Mikey, James, Mikey?
I was just throwing myself on the sword.
Thank you, Mikey. James?
Volunteering as well.
Okay. And I'll throw myself in there as well, but I think Mikey's very good at making things move forward, so I appreciate and thank you, Mikey. Next one here. Additional provisions are needed to have a uniform and consistent policy. Does anybody know what they mean by that? Marika, you're very good at mind reading. Do you have any idea what they're talking about?
This is Marika. I actually don't, but we do have, I think, Kevin from the IPT on the call, so maybe he remembers.
Anybody, IPC people?
This is Kevin. Mikey leaping in, because I think what they're talking about, this is left over from previous conversations, is I think that this is addressing the second sentence of the issue. The second sentence of the issue is the policy is clear that the registrant can override the administrative contact, but how this is implemented is currently at the discretion of the registrar. And I think that what this comment is saying is perhaps to limit that discretion on the part of registrars and make this a bit more consistent. That's the way I'd interpret it, anyway. And by the way, I'd agree with that.
I'm not going to disagree. Does everybody think that that's what they're talking about? So this comes back, in some respects, to the previous comment. In other words, the recommendation to implement a consistent policy. You know, okay. In that case, it's talking about identity, but I think just having a consistent policy. Does anybody disagree with that? No, fine. Okay, Michael Collins agrees a lot. Okay, good. Registrants need a way to address all inappropriate transfers. Registrants need a speedy mechanism to return domains to its previous operational state, coupled with a consistent, robust, transparent, and timely dispute resolution process. Dear business constituency, thank you for the unwieldy sentence. Or maybe dear Marika.
Guess who wrote that sentence? It was a little long. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'll forgive you this time. Just don't do it again. James?
Okay.
Well, we
yeah,
know you're
I think, I think if you throw in the identification requirement that was mentioned earlier by the registry constituency, now that sentence starts to look like a requirements document for a process outline. So I think that that's a good comment.
Okay. Does anybody wildly disagree with it? Does anybody have any other comments, positive, negative, or otherwise, to say about it? No.
Just to
fine.
Combine it. I'm sorry. This is James. Just to combine it with the requirements as mentioned earlier.
Well, just Michaela here, can I just suggest that maybe we need to just combine most of those into this random document we're working on? Because, I mean, there's nothing in there that I see as being really abhorrent. Mikey?
You know, I think that if James and you and I could bash out a first try at the process diagram or some diagram of this or description, that we'd have a pretty good foundation on which we could hang these ornaments on the Christmas tree, because it does seem all pretty consistent.
Yeah, I'd agree, and James is agreeing with you. I mean, the other thing as well is, I mean, I have some bits and bobs which are kind of random to do with establishing registrant's identity in the case of there being no escrowed data, which ICANN staff didn't seem to be too upset with, so it's obviously not that bad. Okay, moving on to the last one here. Or is that the same one? Oh, it's a different one, okay. Such a dispute resolution process would depend for the most part on registrars, but should allow for escalation when registrars are unable or unwilling to participate. And before I open this up to the floor, that's a business constituency comment. Escalation to whom is the obvious question I would have. Escalation to ICANN or is escalation to the registry?
This is Mikey. I wrote that sentence, so let me jump in again. I carefully avoided a couple of my landmines in that sentence because one of the landmines is the landmine of giving registrants the ability to trigger a process like this. We've talked about that before, and I also very carefully left that to the group to decide. So it's on purpose that it's not specific.
James?
Yeah, just throwing this out here, but if we were to modify the consensus policy and it were adopted by the council and the board, then this issue theoretically should be a task for ICANN compliance and not necessarily one where we would have to design it in to the policy itself. If the policy is narrowly drawn, then compliance should be able to enforce consistent participation.
Okay. Anybody else? I'll just my own thought as well. I'm not 100% sure about what to do with that, but I do like the idea of a neutral third party taking some of the responsibility for this, like overseeing it in some respect, because I just think that that lends a certain degree more validity, and also it means that I'm less likely to get sued. Just my own thoughts. Okay, then. Moving on. Issue C. Whether special provisions are needed for a change of registrant when it occurs near the time of a change of registrar. The policy does not currently deal with change of registrant, which often figures in hijacking cases. Okay. Issue is best addressed apart from this policy as IRTP only concerns transfers between registrars, not registrants. That's a comment from the RYC. That's registry, isn't it? Or, yeah. Any thoughts on that? Kevin?
Yeah, that I think actually follows in a little bit with part of the last point talking about restoring the situation to before the transfer. And that would be my query is there ever a, it seems like the typical hijacking case would be the rightful domain owner all of a sudden loses control of the domain, is no longer the registrant, and the domain gets pushed to another registrar. And that's sort of the prototype case that we're looking for, this quick dispute resolution and getting things back to the status quo prior to the hijacking. So it would seem to me that part of our deliberation would be that is the predominant case of hijacking. If that's the case, then that makes
Okay. So you would disagree. Is your comment?
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Collins?
Well, I think that Kevin may be onto something, because I also see that if we can't address registrant transfers at all, most of these opportunities to dispute a transfer are probably moot, because if a registrar change occurs before the registrar change, then the original registrant before the hijacking can't really object to the registrar transfer, the inter-registrar transfer. If a hijacker registrant is the registrant at the time of the transfer. So it seems like if we can't deal with this issue, a lot of this opportunity to discuss any
okay,
kind
I'll,
of... yeah, anyway,
this,
I think I'm finished.
I'll make this simple. Does anybody actually agree with that comment? Does anybody agree with that comment? Does anybody feel that this issue is best addressed elsewhere? Okay, I'll take that resounding silence to mean no. Okay, support for a modification to the list of reasons for denying a transfer to include this as a valid reason, provided that registrars include a provision within their registration agreement with registrants detailing this restriction and employing a mechanism by which a registrant may provide specific proof of rights to the domain in order to bypass the 60-day restriction requirement.
Doesn't that put me down one on the list of long, unwieldy sentences?
It definitely does.
Okay.
But that does not forgive you for producing unwieldy sentences. Two wrongs do not make a right.
All right.
For some odd reason, you put up your hand. I wonder why.
Well, I just wanted to say I'm unpacking this very long, and there's a lot contained here in this comment. And looking at its components, I think I am in agreement with this comment right up until the point where it says employing a mechanism by which a registrant may provide specific proof of rights. I think that's a separate issue, perhaps. There are other 60-day, there are other reasons for denial specified in the IRTP, and I don't know that they also include this exception or, you know, get around it bypass policy. So I don't know why this one would necessarily be, singled out as an exception. I don't know. I'm just pointing out that I'm on board with this comment right up until it gets to that second or third or fourth point there.
Okay. Michael Collins, and then Matt Serlin, and then Mikey O'Connor again. Michael Collins?
I just would like for us to maybe be specific in defining a registrant transfer. Does that mean just an email address change for the registrant or more, I guess? That's all.
Okay. Anybody want to answer that question or deal with us?
Hey, McKaylee, it's Matt. So I think that's the next bullet here in the list. So I don't know if you want to try to address that now, but in my personal opinion, I would view that as a change of the registered name holder, not necessarily just an email address. It would be changing it from Matt Serlin to McKaylee Nealon, for example.
Well, I mean, so basically, you would work on the basis of a change to the registrant / domain holder field. In who is?
Yeah, that's my, when someone asks me what a change of registrant is, that's how I would view it.
That's fine. Okay, so does anybody view a change of registrant to be anything other than what Matt is saying?
This is Kevin, and
yeah.
I think it goes to the basic question of standing and how do you know who the registrant really is, because at some level, if it's a company and some individual puts their email address as the company representative, that's a whole another level of indirection, and that's...
With all due respect, Kevin, there's two things here which I think we can split out. One is, the thing we're discussing is a change of registrant appears as the registrant. The contact address is a slightly different animal. Now, I do understand where you're coming from, but yeah, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole straight away.
True, but I'm saying that just exposes, you know, what I consider the whole weakness of the you know, going back to that proof of identity concept, which is if the registrant is a company, and that seems to be a pretty high volume of registrants out there, how do you verify that someone is acting in the interest of the company? And that would be, you know, I think a fundamental question to say, well, has the registrant really changed because of something peripheral to the record, which could be just as significant to the administration of the domain as changing the text of the field that says registrant? So.
Okay. Matt, I think, was next.
Yeah, so I just wanted to pick up on what James had said in regards to this adding another list of reasons into the transfer denials to account for registrant change, regardless of what that truly means. And I'd respectfully actually disagree with James in that. And then I think we're taking, essentially that's a way to take a shotgun approach and just, you know, to address hijacking, we're essentially saying that, you know, any registrant change would require a 60-day, would allow a registrar to deny a transfer for 60 days. I don't necessarily think that that's the right approach. And so I personally, on behalf of the company, wouldn't necessarily agree with that.
James?
Yes, just responding to my friend Matt on that point. I think that the other reasons for denial are in there for substantial purposes, in that they identify a vulnerability. And I think that if we were to identify a new vulnerability and create something, that I just feel that it should be treated consistently. And I recognize that this could cause an issue with respect to, exchanges of registrations between registrants for whatever reason, whether it's bought or sold or whatever, that this could be an impediment to that type of transaction. So that maybe that's where the request for a bypass is coming from. But I just, you know, wanted to hold this up as on par with some of the other reasons for denial that identified security vulnerabilities. I had one other thought, Michele, and I just wanted to help muddy the waters a little bit. Is a lot of what we're discussing in issue C, country codes will sometimes have their own type of transaction that they will call a trade, mm-hmm. but it's not really, its analog is not really defined in the GTLD space, and I wonder if there's any merit to looking into that, to looking into how some of the country codes operate that.
Okay.
I'm just putting that out there as a question. I really don't know, I'm not familiar with how they all do it. I think there's some registry involvement in just about all cases, so maybe that's something we're not...
The only ones I'm aware of all involve registry interaction.
Okay.
For example, I bought about 10 COUKs in the aftermarket this morning, and I was able to do the entire change of registrant directly through Nomines in cooperation with the seller, and it took like 30 seconds. The thing, coming back to the registrant is, I mean, in the case of COUK, you cannot change the bit that appears in the registrant field without it going through Nomines. I can change, say, the email address without going through Nomines. I mean, it gets updated with Nomines. I don't have to go through them. Matt?
Yeah, I was just going to pick up on what you had said, and I think James brings up actually a good point. You know, the one thing that I would say that those sort of registry models encourages it's standard across the board. So, Michele, like you just said, in order to update any ownership record on any .co.uk name, you have to go through the same process. And that's clearly something that's lacking today in the GTLD space. Now, whether or not the GTLD registries are open to something like a trade program or something like that that does require registry involvement is obviously a different question. But I think James brings up a good point.
Okay. So this isn't to end up as Mikey. Go ahead.
This is Mikey. I think that I'd like to weigh in support of part one of this paragraph, that we ought to acknowledge this situation in the list of allowable causes for denial.
Okay.
And the second part, I'm thinking that I'd like to attach our comment down at the bottom of the list to this. I agree with James that I don't think it's a good idea to have a unique process for this particular reason, but that if we had a consistent process for all of the holds, that maybe this could go in that pile. And in that case, I would be more inclined to support something like this, but across the board rather than unique to this particular cause of denial.
Anybody else want to weigh in on this? James.
Yeah, just that I wanted to support what Mikey was saying and point out that some registrars have adopted these restrictions and included them in their registration agreement, I think, because they recognize the shortcomings and the ineffectiveness of our anti-hijacking or rapid return tools that we currently have at our disposal today. And so, if, as Mikey was saying, we're able to close that or remedy that situation, then maybe this is more of a symptom of the same virus. And if we can just take a more holistic approach to this problem, some of the needs for this might be mitigated somewhat, or at least the frequency is how often this scenario comes up.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, then. Right. So, okay, just to summarize the kind of feedback we've had from this, most of you seem to, except with the exception to Matt, most of you seem to support the idea of some form of denial of transfer based on a registrant change, though we're not 100% clear how best to define registrant. And very few of you like the idea of being able to bypass the restriction. Or did I pick something up wrong? Okay, moving on. Last one, quickly, and then we better finish up because time's running out. Need to develop a clear and concise definition of what constitutes a change of registrant. Okay, does anybody have any thoughts on this? Apart from what we've already heard. Does anybody disagree that the concept of a change of registrant needs to be dealt with? Michael, go ahead.
I would like to go on board with in agreement with the idea that the email address should not the email address change alone should not necessarily be considered a registrant transfer. I have recently had a situation myself where, and I imagine this is not all that infrequent, where I realized that I had used an email address in my registration that I was no longer active, that I was no longer using. And so I wanted to do a transfer, a registrar transfer, and it was easy enough for me to change the email address before I proceeded with the transfer, because after all, I'm going to get confirmation emails, or I would have never received confirmation emails, a better way to put it, So either it was either going to be wait 60 days, which could be burdensome if a registrar changes pricing policy or changes pricing or other policy that you didn't like, and your renewal date was coming up. And then I think renewal of the domain name is another reason for, is it or not, I apologize if I'm incorrect, is that cause another 60-day hold?
No.
A 60-day?
Categorically, no.
Okay. Well, it I guess it provides, it would still provide some hardship, possibly, if you wanted to transfer your domain name to avoid renewing it at a current registrar and the 60-day hold, was you were caused to do that because of the 60-day hold. I think that there is some valid concern for hijacking, but I think as long as the other registrant data doesn't change, and we have the other policy things that we're talking about, changes that would allow dispute resolution to be handled quickly, it may be enough that just the registrant field is consistent. Thank you.
Just coming back on this, I mean, in relation to this thing with the email, if transfers are the problem, under the current policy, a registrar may accept the FOA in other forms other than purely electronically. I mean, we had to do it for a client there the other day because they no longer had access to that particular email address. We had to get a signed FOA with a copy of their passport, which is fine as far as the policy is concerned. Is that a big hurdle for people? Chris?
I don't know if I'm answering your question, but my thoughts on the changing of the definition, surely it's just the change in the field. I'm not sure what the registries are asking here. Are they saying accept spelling mistakes or little changes like that? It seems a fairly obvious question to me.
So when does a spelling mistake become a major change? Where do you draw the line? Chris?
Well, from the outside, it's difficult to know, isn't it? From the outside, the change of an I to an A in a word, in a company name, might seem sort of innocuous, but it is conceivable that you're actually changing it from one company to another. So that's where it's a difficult one. I was just wondering, is that what the registries are meaning by this? We're simply here talking about the name of the registrant field changing, or is it something wider to do with addresses and emails?
Okay. James?
Yeah, I think I didn't take anything too specific away from this comment, just that the definitions were needed. One thought would be that the registrant name and organization name are locked fields, if you will, or flagged fields, that any change to those fields will put some sort of a transfer hold on the name. I think that if we start to go down the path of, you know, if there is an evil person out there and her name is Jane Bladel and she decides to compromise my account and take all of my domains, I just would hate to go down the very fuzzy logic problem of determining how many letters constitute a significant enough change to lock the name. I think changing the name, changing the organization name, or going from an organization only to an individual only, or the reverse of that, just getting those out there on the table is clear-cut cases of situations where I think a registrar should be able to guard against that name transferring out for a period of time.
Just to add, coming back to the CCTLD example, with Nominet, for example, any change of any type to the registrant field, only to the registrant field, nothing else, as far as they're concerned, constitutes a change. The only exception that they have ever made for us was the removal of extraneous characters that had ended up in the registrant field. So, for example, when you kind of copy and paste
text from one format of a document to another, and you end up with all those weird characters that don't mean anything. Those kind of things they would fix because they just didn't make any sense. But everything else they consider to be a registrant change. James.
Yes, and just real quickly, I think this definition is also important in defining what doesn't constitute a registrant change and is just normal maintenance and management of the registration, such as phone numbers, fax numbers, addresses, and things of that nature. But again, there's a vulnerability in publishing that to the wide world because now you've essentially given the blueprint to would-be hijackers on which field you're looking at and which field you aren't. So I think that there is some value in at least not in changing that and keeping that somewhat fluid. So
maybe we need to just remove who is from the picture. Oops, did I say that loud? Okay, guys, it's gone past the time. So I think we better call this a day. A couple of you threw yourselves on metaphorical swords. So Mikey, James, Paul Diaz, and myself, probably best thing to do is liaise with each other via email and see if we can push something forward. And if anybody else has anything else they'd like to follow up with, in particular relation to definitions of registrants and anything like that, please feel free to use the list, or if you want to just ping other people in the group, do so. I'll talk to you all next week, okay?
Thanks, bye now.
Thanks, McKinley.
Thanks, McKinley.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.